We've all seen it on a job application, the box you have to check if you've ever been convicted of a crime. This hour, Iowa lawmakers consider getting rid of it. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. First, I talk with a convicted Iowa felon about finding employment once you're out of prison. Then, a conversation with Iowa lawmakers who are considering the so-called Ban the Box legislation. Also, voices for and against Ban the Box. And we'll talk about other criminal justice reforms being discussed at our Capitol. Also joining us this hour, Iowa Public Radio legislative correspondent Joyce Russell. Considering Ban the Box and other criminal justice reforms. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, the Iowa legislature is back in session, has been for a little bit. And when our lawmakers are at work in Des Moines in the session, that will go probably around until about May. We never know quite when it will end. We like to devote Mondays to current legislative issues, talking to Iowans proposing and affected by possible changes in Iowa law, as well as talking with lawmakers and others connected to the various issues. This hour, Ban the Box and other criminal justice reforms. We've all seen it on a job application. It's that box you have to check if you've ever been convicted of a crime. 19 states have adopted policies that leave questions about criminal history off at a first-round job application. Legislation to ban the box, so to speak, is now being considered here in Iowa, with civil rights groups for the move, some business leaders speaking out against it. Later, we'll talk with lawmakers from both sides of the aisle, also city council member from Dubuque who's against it, Betty Andrews of the NAACP, who is for it. And that's a little later, but first, what's it like to be convicted of a crime, serve your time, be released, and then try to find a job? Last Friday, I spoke with Justin R. McCarthy of Dubuque. Justin is a trained welder with a felony conviction on his record.
I got busted in 2006 for user of controlled substance and possession of a firearm. I had a couple ounces of weed and a couple firearms in the house. Mm-hmm. I ended up doing 15 months in, FCI Pekin, federal minimum or medium security prison down in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. In the crime, was any violence involved in the crime you committed?
No, actually, I was trying to stop somebody from committing violence upon themselves. My friend's girlfriend at the time was suicidal. I told him to put the guns in my house. A few weeks after that, cops came and busted me for the weed. They found those, and I got to take a little extended state paid vacation, as it were.
Mm. So this was a 15-month sentence. You did 12 months of that. When were you released?
I was released in, 2008.
2008, paroled, and then supervised on probation after that?
Yeah, I completed my supervised release in 2011.
Okay. So after your release, when did you start your job search?
Pretty much immediately. I had to do 39 days in the halfway house here in Dubuque to, quote-unquote, reacclimate to society. So I started my job search while I was in there. That was the only time that I could really get out. So it was more motivation to get out and look for a job and kind of breathe the fresh air for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you're a trained welder, right?
Yeah, I just graduated from Northeast Iowa Community College back in May. And their welding program.
Mm-hmm. And I understand welding is actually in high demand, isn't it?
Yeah, and Dubuque is actually called kind of the manufacturing mecca. There's all kinds of metal fab shops, welding shops all around the area. They kind of make a bunch of parts for John Deere, Caterpillar, and a bunch of the other bigger manufacturers.
So you apply for jobs. How many jobs have you applied for over the months, over the years since you've been out?
Goodness, I can't even remember. Just in the last few months, I've probably put out 50, 60, 70 resumes.
Mm-hmm. And this is normally these days done online?
Correct. I do it online, and then there's a few employment agencies in town that I put my information into, and they'll call me occasionally if there's somebody that wants to bring me in for an interview.
Mm-hmm. So when you fill out your application, you put your resume in there. Is it most or is it all applications that have that question, have you been convicted of a crime?
nine times out of ten, you're going to have to, you know, disclose if you've been convicted of a crime. Some of them will say if you've asked if you've been convicted of a felony within the past 7 years, which I'm just over that point that I don't have to disclose it, but I do anyway, just because I'd like to be straightforward and let people know, you know, that I've made mistakes, but I've come back from them.
Mm-hmm. How limiting do you think this is? You've served your time. We've heard a little bit about the crime that you committed there. How big of a hurdle is this for you to reestablish yourself and make something of yourself here?
It makes it really difficult for guys like me. I mean, there's a recidivism rate of 85% in the United States. I'm one of the 15% that stayed out and hasn't gone back. But for a lot of guys that are first getting out, you know, there's no programs in prison, or at least the one that I was in. So they get thrown back in, you know, thrown back to the wolves and told, all right, now you're done. You did your time sitting in your little box. Now go out and be a perfect citizen. And these guys get out there and they get frustrated because, you know, employers don't want to bring them in for interviews. So they end up going back to their old ways and, you know, kind of falling off the wagon at that point.
Mm-hmm. What indications do you have? Of course, you just don't get a call back for an interview. How do you know that it's not because of the checkoff that you have a criminal background, that you serve time, that you're not getting called in for an interview? It's hard to tell, isn't it?
It's really hard to tell. I mean, I have no direct correlation to it, but I know that a lot of the places that I don't have to disclose it, I come in, I talk to them just like I'm talking to you now, and, you know, they seem like I'm, you know, think that I'm a decent person. And then I go ahead and tell them, you know, I just want to be up front because you're probably going to do a background check. You know, this is what my past is. This is what I've done to, you know, fix myself since then. And I feel a lot of them, if they would have seen what my crime was, especially since firearms are involved, and that's kind of a hot ticket topic now, that they just wouldn't give me the time of day. They'd go and look for another candidate.
Mm-hmm. So when you do get face-to-face with people and you are up front about serving time for this crime, what are the reactions you've gotten?
Most of them are appreciative that I'm truthful about it. And some of them will kind of get a little leery, like, well, what did you do? And they, I mean, I fit the description of, you know, the typical convict, you know, covered in tattoos, bald head, giant beard, big scary guy. So some of them, when they hear that I do have a criminal history, get a little bit leery.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they're appreciative about my honesty.
Mm-hmm. Do you have family?
Yeah, I have two daughters. One of them is 6 years old. And my youngest just turned three just a few weeks ago. And I've got a lovely fiance. We're getting married in October.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. So this means a lot to you. I mean, certainly means to a single person, a job means quite a lot. But to someone who has the responsibility of a family, this means a lot to you.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And I understand just within the last few days, you have some very good news on your jobs front after a very long search. What have you come up with?
I'm actually going to be starting work in Platteville, Wisconsin as a CNC operator Monday morning. I'm going up this afternoon to fill out the paperwork and get all set.
So, a CNC operator, you're milling various parts?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You just put them in the machine and let the computer do its thing, make sure you measure them, make sure, you know, parts fit tolerances, and then send them on down the line.
Tell me about how you approached them, and obviously successfully, what worked with them? Why were they willing to give you this chance?
Well, like I had, you know, touched on before, I went in there and just talked to them like, you know, you and I are talking. I walked in, you know, had the attitude that I've already got the job, get them kind of on my side and see that they, you know, are dealing with a decent human being. Then I'll tell them after that, you know, and before you do a background check, I'm going to let you know this, 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 and that. And the guy that I interviewed with, he was really cool about it. And he's like, yeah, I don't even really care about that. I mean, you seem like a good candidate. You want to work. So.
Mm-hmm. Do you get the feeling there are a lot of people in your position?
That I don't really know. I mean, there's a lot of guys who get out and they genuinely want to do something better. They don't want to go back. I mean, my motivation was not ever being like my cellmate when I was in there. He did 25 years, got out when he was 70. I don't want to be 70 years old and walking back out of the welcome back out of the gates.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Iowa lawmakers who are considering criminal justice reform, so-called ban the box legislation, getting rid of this box on employment applications. What would your message for them be? What would you want them first and foremost to think about when considering such criminal justice reforms?
I mean, our prison system is, you know, they preach rehabilitation and trying to build people back up. And I think if they're going to preach that, they need to give people at least a level playing field in the application process. I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, continuously being punished for something that I did 10 years ago when I'm not even close to being the same person I was a decade ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, Justin R. McCarthy, thank you very much for joining us for this conversation. We really want to express our congratulations for your new job and hope that all goes well for you and also for your family and your fiancé.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sure it'll be good. I just want to put my nose to the grindstone and get out there and do something better. So I'm motivated.
All right, Justin. Take care.
Thank you.
It's a conversation I had with Justin R. McCarthy, recorded last Friday. We're talking about criminal justice reforms, this ban the box on this edition, legislation on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's Legislative Monday. Joyce Russell is with me, State House correspondent for Iowa Public Radio from the State House Law Library. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Ben.
Can you give us a little background on this ban the box legislation, how it surfaced, how long it's been around here in Iowa?
Well, the NAACP has had this as a priority for some time. They had a news conference at the beginning of the session last year and called for this and a number of other criminal justice reforms. This year, and a bill was filed last year in the Senate, and now they're retaking that up in the Senate. They've had an initial hearing on it, what we call a subcommittee meeting on it. Senator Herman Kornbach of Ames is heading that up. And there's quite a bit of interest in the bill at this initial subcommittee meeting. A number of business interests are very skeptical, and then a number of groups are very much in support, such as the NAACP.
Right. We'll hear from Betty Andrews of the NAACP a little bit later in the hour. Also a businessman, a council member from Dubuque, who is against it. Skeptical, I guess you said. Good choice of words there. Joyce, with you at the State House Law Library, we have two lawmakers joining us this hour. State Senator, Democrat Steve Saunders from State Center, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Hello, Senator Saunders.
Good morning.
Just into the afternoon. Good afternoon to you. State Representative Republican Bobby Kaufman with you as well at the library there from Wilton, sits on the House Judiciary Committee. Representative Kaufman, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Let me talk with you first of all, Senator Saunders. Why the changes? We heard the National Employment Law Project says that 19 other states have put policies in place to ban that question. Have you ever been convicted of a felony? This is just the first round of the job application. Why make that move in Iowa?
Well, you know, talking to several people, and we've been looking at doing some sort of justice reform and also looking at, even in the past, we looked at restoring felon voting rights. I think this is another step in that procedure to try to make sure that when we incarcerate people, they've done their time, they're doing better. How do we got to make sure that they're getting jobs as well. And so it makes some sense to me to get them past the first step. If mm-hmm. it's a matter of putting, you know, down on a box, they've sent it in, and all that happens is that application gets thrown away or gets set aside because there's a lot of applications for that job. This gives that person the opportunity to come in and be able to explain what happened, why it happened, and how they've changed.
And we heard that testimonial from an ex-felon, an ex-convict, I should say, Justin R. McCarthy there. Senator Saunders, you heard that. So this is the type of people you have in mind. I mean, from our short conversation, it sounds like this is a guy we all well serve to reintegrate into society with gainful employment.
Oh, absolutely. And I think he also mentioned that, you know, jail and prison is not just a punishment thing. We really should be rehabilitating folks when they get out, that they become a good member of society, taxpayer, working and on the straight and narrow for the rest of their life. And so that's what we should be shooting for always when we look at different bills and different things that we're trying to do here at the legislature.
State Representative Bobby Kaufman, does your party, the Republican Party, support this bill?
Well, this bill specifically, we haven't had discussions on. I anticipate those will happen. I think Governor Branstad kind of set the tone on criminal justice reform as a whole. During his State of the State address, he called for a number of criminal justice reform issues to be brought to the table. I know that Representative Ken Reiser is working on equalizing the penalties and the disparity right now between crack and powdered cocaine. I've personally put in a bill with sponsorship for the sealing of juvenile records. So I think the conversation in regards to criminal justice reform as a whole is alive and well. And as far as details are concerned, I think the how the session goes will kind of dictate how many of these different policy pieces we move forward on.
What about this specific piece of legislation that banned the box? What are your thoughts on that? What are the party's thoughts on it, the Republican Party's thoughts on it from your colleagues?
Well, certainly listening to the gentleman that was on before us, folks like him absolutely need to be reintegrated into society. He's paid his debts. He's paid his dues. And there shouldn't be a box to prevent him from becoming employed. I would caution, however, just from completely blanket taking it away. For instance, if you commit a violent crime, if you commit a crime against children, I do think those are things that employers should be able to find out ahead of time.
So it matters the type of crime that you commit, Steve Saunders, would that be in your thinking as well, whether, I guess, children were involved, whether there was a violent action involved?
Well, certainly those things should be considered. And as we're considering this bill, I think there are already some things written into the bill. There are, you know, certain occupations as well that law enforcement, for example, you know, to be if you're already a felon, you can't have a gun, right? So getting into law enforcement might not be one of those areas that they get to see beforehand. But I think, too, it sort of depends on each case, and that's the other issue here. Each case is a little bit different. And at least in the story that Justin told us, those guns were not his. Now, that's a little hard for law enforcement to know. Obviously, he may have pled guilty to having guns with drugs. But so each case is different. We have to keep those things in mind as well.
I'd like to comment here briefly about the governor's condition of the state. Representative Kaufman, you mentioned that he expressed some openness to criminal justice reform. The main specific thing he called for was sealing some juvenile court records. And actually some of these more weighty things, such as ban the box or ban racial profiling, he didn't come out in favor of. And in fact, one African-American lawmaker, Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad, told me that he wished he would have gone further than he went. But at any rate, since you mentioned the governor's speech, would you agree that ban the box is going to be a lot harder to get past, or racial profiling a lot harder to get past than the more limited thing about juvenile records?
Well, I think certainly there are heavier policy lifts, but I'm glad that the conversation is taking place. We need to have conversations about sentencing. We need to have conversations about racial profiling. We need to have conversations about ban the box so that people that have legitimate concerns, which there are extremely legitimate concerns, can air out their problems, and we can see if we can come to an agreement. So while he didn't specifically come out in favor of some of those heavier policy talks, I think the fact that he brought it up at all is going to create conversation on all these issues this session.
And Senator Saunders, do you, Representative Abdul-Samad, do you wish he'd gone a little further?
Well, it's always helpful if the governor would have come out and specifically names more of the items of which we're talking about. The few items he did mention, I think one of them was giving phone cards to people that are in jail so they can call out for free and those type of things. Those, in my view, are very minor to really what we're trying to talk about when we're trying to look at judicial reform, minority impacts on folks. I know Representative Kaufman mentioned a couple things, which was the crack and powder cocaine. Well, that was passed by the Senate last year. It sits in the House. There doesn't need to be another bill, whether it's sitting in Clell Bodler's in his committee. And I appreciate the sealing of the juvenile court records. We've looked at those as well. I think, in fact, the Department of Corrections just came down with another bill too. So we might have some competing bills on some of these. But it would have been nice to have the governor say a little bit more. And I think if you then couple that with what the Supreme Court and Justice Katie said, I think it's easier to move those things along when you have the governor already coming out saying we want these things done.
And Representative Kaufman, you mentioned the bill to equalize penalties for crack and powder cocaine. Senator Sodders just said that bill's in the Judiciary Committee. They passed it last year. Why should we think there's a better chance for it this year?
Well, it's in the Public Safety Committee. And the reason I think there's a better chance of it passing this year as opposed to last is this year people are talking about it. Representative Ken Reiser is a Republican who is spearheading efforts to get that bill passed. I think that you've got a pretty similar chemical makeup from what scientists tell me when you're talking about crack versus powdered cocaine, yet the penalties between the two are 5 versus 15 years. Oftentimes, the powdered cocaine is used by more people with affluent backgrounds, and I think that unfairly, I don't want to weaken any of the penalties, but I think equalizing them, that conversation is going on.
I know it's not your committee, but is it likely that the Public Safety Committee will take up what the Senate sent over?
I think anytime you have colleagues in your own caucus bringing up an issue that's important to them, people will listen. Can't guarantee that it'll happen, but this year there are people asking for it as opposed to last year. It wasn't even on my radar. I didn't have people talking to me about it.
Let's get a quick call in before we have to go to break. Michael is with us from Waukee. Michael, we don't have much time, but I understand you have a little bit of a story that's pertinent here.
Absolutely. I just wanted to reinforce the portion of the conversation when we're talking about job employment for convicted felons. I myself, a couple of years ago now, pled guilty to a crime that was a felony crime. However, it was reduced to a misdemeanor. But that felony crime still showed up on background checks, and I had an incredibly difficult time finding a job because of that box that you guys are talking about.
Mm-hmm. So
that had nothing to do with how qualified I was for the job, because I am very qualified. I'm a business professional, but it is one of those things that just follows you everywhere. And the reason that I bring that back up is because of the point of recidivism. Or getting these people jobs helps prevent recidivism, which in turn brings down the crime rate.
Okay, so Michael, very quickly, you think this could be a factor that would reduce recidivism?
Absolutely, the number one factor. In my parole, the biggest thing that my parole officer preached to everyone in the program was getting a job, because of how much that reduces the chance of reoffending.
Okay, very good, Michael. Thank you very much. Calling from Waukee with your perspective on a bit of a dodgy telephone line. Sorry about that, but we understood most of it. Michael in Waukee. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to be continuing our conversation with lawmakers with us, State Representative Bobby Kaufman of Wilton, also State Senator Democrat Steve Sodders from State Senator. Perhaps you'd like to join us. Join me and Joyce Russell, State House correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. Should Iowa ban the box? Should criminal history be considered in the first round of a job application? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation by talking with a city council member from Dubuque who's against this move. Also, Betty Andrews of the NAACP, who is for it. Stay tuned. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support comes from Urban Acres.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On Mondays during the legislative session, we like to consider issues at hand in our state capitol at the legislature. And this hour, we are talking about lawmakers considering ban the box legislation and other criminal justice reforms. Of course, Joyce Russell, our State House correspondent, is with us, along with State Senator Steve Sodders, a Democrat from State Center, and Republican State Representative Bobby Kaufman of Wilton. And let's hear some voices pro and con on this issue of ban the box. That's the box that you would check on most applications to indicate that you have committed a crime in your life. And right now we're joined by Kevin Lynch. He is a Dubuque City Council member, also a business owner. Kevin Lynch, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Now, I understand last year the city of Dubuque removed the question, have you ever been convicted of a felony, of a crime, from its first round job applications. Why?
Well, it was really an administrative decision at that point, and was one that the city manager and the human resources department, along with our human rights department, decided that that was just the route that they wanted to head, and seemed to be the best course of action for them at the time in looking for city employees.
Mm-hmm. So that concerns just City of Dubuque city employees. Now the Dubuque Human Rights Commission is encouraging all employers in the Dubuque area to remove that question. And I guess you're considering that in the Dubuque City Council. How is that being played out right now?
Well, there's an important point of clarification there, Ben, that this most recent action that we took on it wasn't necessarily supporting the ban the box, but what happened was the Human Rights Commission got together, and as with all of our volunteer commissions, they studied a particular issue that was of interest to their particular area, and they devised a set of recommendations and principles and things that they felt were best for the city to consider adopting citywide. And so they formed a memo, put it together, and they sent it to the city council. And so at our meeting when this came up, the motion was just to receive and file the memo. And that was all. It was not really approval of the measure or moving forward with anything. It was just to receive and file and then see what came of it later on. I did vote against it at that time, and the reason that I voted against it was because that I was fairly certain that there was going to be confusion over that by approving it and filing it, that was basically giving tacit approval to it, and I wanted to be on record early as being against it. And as happened, it was basically perceived and reported in the media that we supported Ban the Box.
Okay. So tell us, to talk a little bit more about the reasons you are not in favor of Ban the Box, at least in the private sector. And you are a business owner there in Dubuque.
That is correct. Yeah, I've owned my own business for coming up on 19 years now. And it's not as sinister as some people might make it out to be, but it's simply I don't think that it's fair to shift the burden of discovery on this issue back on the employer. There's certain consequences that come along with committing a crime. I mean, I think I was not unlike a lot of people that was taught at a very young age that if you commit a crime, there are lifelong consequences from doing that, not just getting caught, thrown in jail, and doing a prison sentence. There are other consequences that go along with it, this being one of them. Mm-hmm. And, I don't see why that should be a hidden factor in the job-seeking process.
Let me ask it to you this way and be sort of an advocate for the other side to play devil's advocate here. We talked with Justin R. McCarthy, who was a convicted felon, who has been out for many years and has had to check the box. He did get a job now. But why not discover that in a face-to-face interview so you can size up the person as a whole rather than just laying that application aside because there is a check in a certain place about a convicted felon? Why not make that part of an entire evaluation of a person and thereby doing so encourage the reintegration of people who have, let's say, served their time, their debt to society, and it's also in our interests to reintegrate them so that they don't come out with several knocks against them and perhaps are driven to despair and, who knows, end up in prison again.
Sure. And I guess my response to that would be that it's just a matter of who necessarily needs to take on the burden of of disclosing that point in advance. And to show you that I'm not such a hard guy, I mean, in the past, I did hire someone that was had a criminal record. And I did find that out in advance before I hired him. And the reason that I did hire this person, after all, was because, one, he was deserving of the job. Two, I thought that he was the person, the right person to do the job. Three, I thought he deserved a break. And fourth, because he was honest and upfront with me about it. Mm-hmm. And that spoke volumes to me as a potential employer of this person that he deserved a break. And I did hire the guy.
So you saw that initially on the job application that he had checked that he had a criminal background, and you said, regardless, I still want to interview him, huh? Okay.
Yeah. You know, and employers in Iowa can't afford to be that choosy, I don't think. You know, our workforce numbers continue to go down. We have an aging population. This is going to hit critical mass in Iowa, I think, in the coming years, where we just don't have enough people to fill the available jobs. So, you know, employers have to be able to consider anybody and be open to that, but they shouldn't be put at a disadvantage to do that either.
Okay, thanks for your view. Kevin Lynch, Dubuque City Council member, and as we've heard, a business owner in the Dubuque area. Kevin, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ben.
If you just joined us, we're talking about lawmakers in Des Moines considering ban the box legislation, other criminal justice reforms. State Senator Steve Sauters with us and State Representative Bobby Kaufman, along with Joyce Russell, as we discuss that. Bobby Kaufman, as we listen to that conversation there, I imagine things must have lined up a little bit of skeptical opinion there must have lined up with you. You are also a business owner, or not, Representative Kaufman? Do you share some of the skepticism you heard in that conversation?
For me, it's all about what a person how they present themselves in person, and so for me, that's not an immediate disqualifier.
What about the idea of the objection? There was he talked about shifting the burden of discovery to the employer, at least in the first instance.
Well, I mean, there's some concern there for some business owners, but like for me specifically, for me, it's all about how the person presents themselves in person. So I don't share that same skepticism personally, but I certainly do understand how some businesses would hold their point of view.
Mm-hmm. Also with you in the State House Law Library is Betty Andrews, president of the Iowa-Nebraska chapter of the NAACP. Betty Andrews, welcome to our conversation.
Thank you for having me.
You're backing this legislation, ban the box legislation. You've heard the conversation, I think, up to this point in the hour. What other points do you want to make in favor of this change?
Well, certainly, as the NAACP, this issue is important to us because of the disproportionality in our state in terms of the African Americans going through the criminal justice system at higher rates. And so as they are returning home from prison, having this issue before them is going to affect them in the sense that if there are more percentage-wise people with felony convictions that are African Americans, this particular issue of banning the box is going to affect our community more greatly.
Mm-hmm. Of course, many of us have applied for jobs and we don't get an answer. We don't have a criminal background and we still don't get an answer. So it can be a rare thing to get a job interview called in for to get that second stage towards a new job. Do we have any, I don't know, data that would say this is the quantify the disadvantage that we're dealing out possibly with this box on our applications, Betty?
You know, there is data on that, and unfortunately I didn't bring that particular data, but I do know that African Americans generally have an employment rate of at least double that of the general population. And, you know, just as we've heard earlier from the Representative Kaufman, and I'm sorry, I hope I'm getting your name correctly, and then Councilman Lynch, there really should, you know, they said it's about how a person might present themselves in person. And I think that that's kind of the gist of this type of legislation, to allow that conversation to happen without it being discouraged at the initial application process. Oftentimes, if there's no opportunity to have that conversation, so hence banning the box would allow that in-person presentation and assessment of that person so that they could see if this person is actually the right person for the job, and also allows that person to share what the circumstances were, maybe even the fact that it may have been a crime that happened when they were 18 and they're now 42 or something like that. So there are a lot of variables that can take place if we allow people to not have to strike that box initially, especially because oftentimes that box even covers things like traffic tickets as well as have you been arrested, not necessarily convicted.
Right, because some of those boxes, I think, do they vary in what they ask? Because some say a crime, the general term crime. Some say a felony, don't they?
Absolutely. They vary from felony to crime to ticket to arrest.
Mm-hmm. Joe from Jefferson writes, he called to say that we have too many crimes punishable by felonies in Iowa. He says his son was convicted of a marijuana crime 20 years ago. The only reason he wasn't convicted of a felony was because they had money to hire a lawyer. So, Betty Andrews, that's also something that concerns you. People of color might not, have the resources. Is that something?
Absolutely. And there again is another stat that African Americans have about 40% of the income. And nationally, African Americans have a ratio of 1 to 13 in terms of wealth, meaning for every $1 that an African American has, the general population has 13, or $100 versus $1,300. So you can see that there is a wealth gap and not having the money to hire a proper attorney, and those things would definitely affect the outcome of those cases, and also the outcome for their families. And when you consider that, having a felony conviction is somewhat akin to having a great visualization is just having something tattooed across your forehead, almost to say that, I've been in a situation, and it doesn't really allow necessarily for overcoming. And so that's what we're hoping to provide, is fair chances for those who have been convicted.
Ms. Andrews,
yes.
You were a frequent participant in the governor's committee that he had, an interim committee that he had to address the issues of disparities in the prison system. They came up with some recommendations. Those included, somebody already mentioned the phone rates, making phone rates for prisoners fairer. Then there was also something about jury selection, which is an important piece of the, criminal justice system. But you and others who were there when they made their final report, you made no bones about the fact that you really hope that wasn't the end of it. Am I right that that didn't go nearly as far as you had hoped?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the governor appointed the Criminal Justice Working Committee at the Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities, which is a summit that the NAACP is presenting sponsor of, that looks at the disparities within Iowa. And we're going on our third year. And the NAACP and me personally, we were organization, in addition with a number of the court system, the Attorney General's office, the Department of Corrections, that served on that committee and dealing with a number of issues, including, as you mentioned, the phone rates and the jury pool selection, as well as mental health courts. And there was one more. But I want to say that I actually just recently visited Anamosa Prison, and one of the things that they lauded was the fact that they now only have to pay 11 cents per minute for their phone phone calls. So we know that there is there has been a good outcome for some with that. But absolutely, I do believe that those issues that we have addressed, although they are a good start, I call them toe wetting issues. And when I say that they're toe wetting, they're issues that definitely open the door and help us allow us to stick our toe in the water, so to speak. But we hope to see some issues that go a little deeper, ankle, knees, dive in. So that's what we're looking at. So definitely looking at racial profiling and certainly this issue of ban the box. We want to address some of the mandatory minimums. I appreciate the equalizing bill of the crack cocaine versus powder. Those are certainly some of the issues that the NAACP is looking at strongly.
Representative Abdul-Samad, I asked him on the governor's condition of the state day, I said, are these baby steps? And he said, well, maybe we're crawling, is how he put it. Representative Kaufman, I take this back to the ban the box issue. Do you actually have that on your job application? Do you have a box that?
No.
You don't?
I do not.
Okay. And is that by design or?
It's all about the fact that I like to talk people face to face. I don't care what color your skin is, how old you are, what your background is. I want to know face to face how you interact with me. That's my precursor, not a box.
And did you make I guess there are probably forms out there for you to use. Did you make a conscious decision? Here's a form with the box. Here's a form without it. Did you make a conscious decision to choose the form without the box?
To put it on there never even crossed my mind.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting also, you, Representative Kaufman, have the perspective of a business owner there in Cedar County. Senator Sodders, you are a law enforcement officer when you're not serving in the legislature. I wonder how much that informs your view on this issue.
Well, I think it's just a piece. You know, part of being chair of judiciary, too, it's our job and all legislators' job to listen to constituents have come in and petition us for different things. And this is one of the areas that we had a lot of people have come in, a lot of information from Betty and her group and other groups. But, you know, part of being the chair of judiciary the last 2 years, this was one of my top priorities, at least in the Senate judiciary, was to look at justice reform, minority impact on bills. And so we've worked very hard on that over the last couple of years. So some of these things, you know, we've passed. Last year we looked at marijuana, small amounts of marijuana from a serious to a simple misdemeanor. Had a bill last year that moved possession of with the intent to deliver marijuana, small amounts from a D felony to an aggravated misdemeanor. Again, getting kind of away from the felonies. So we've looked at different things. We had a bill that would kind of relieve judges of the mandatory minimums on first-time drug offenses to give some more flexibility on the particular case. I think all those are wise. They're good for Iowa. They're good for our jail system. And we're really look at the individual and where are they at, and can we do a better job of rehabilitating someone outside of prison? So all those areas, I think, are important. And I think for law enforcement, a lot of law enforcement would agree.
One of those bills that you're referring to that had to do with small amounts of marijuana, I thought the information that the Department of Corrections came forward with while you were debating that bill was very interesting. They actually showed you how many fewer African Americans specifically would be in prison today if these easier sentences were in there. Is that something you're going to be pushing for, Ms. Andrews?
Absolutely. And when you consider that Iowa, as the ACLU has shared, is in Iowa, African Americans are 8 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana. And the truth is that data shows that we don't that African Americans don't use or work with marijuana any more than the general population. And so that is definitely a piece in terms of disparities and a conversation that we need to continue to have.
And Representative Kaufman, that bill passed, at least one of those bills passed the Senate and died in the Judiciary Committee. Would you give them any better chance this year?
I think it went to Clell's committee, too.
Oh, sorry, so I got that wrong again. Sorry. Public safety, not public judiciary. Time. But from what you see in the climate in the House, is it likely that that's going to go in? I mean, the same bill, this is the second year of the two-year General Assembly. It's there in his committee. What chances would you give that of moving this year?
Somewhere in the middle of a guarantee and saying that it's not going to go anywhere. I think the change is that Governor Brandt had brought up the overall topic. You've got legislators talking about it that weren't talking about it last year. I think the fact that the conversation is going on in January leads some credence to the fact that some of these actually might have a chance this year.
Okay. Very quickly, Representative Coffin, we just have a few seconds left. What about medical marijuana? Any movements there to loosen that? We heard from Senator Sodders a moment ago.
I've agreed to be a co-sponsor of language in the House. I believe that that conversation is very much alive this year.
Okay. Thank you very much. Conversation to be continued here on River to River. State Representative Bobby Coffman of Wilton, State Senator Steve Sodders of State Center. I want to thank you very much for coming in this hour. Also, of course, thanks to Betty Andrews, President of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP. Thank you both, all three of you, in fact.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My colleague Joyce Russell, State House Correspondent for Iowa Public Radio. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.